If I were going to play a Bladesinger in a new D&D campaign today, this is how I would build it. So, sure. Let's call it Bladesinger 3.0. Welcome to D4. Hey everybody. So here at D4, each week we take a deep dive into one, sometimes two, specific character builds for our favorite TTRPGs. We theorycraft about them, we crunch numbers about them, not so that I can tell you the right way or the best way to build and play a character for D&D or Pathfinder, but to explore one potential way to build and play a character in the hopes of creating something that is both really fun, but also really powerful. So if you enjoy creating characters for your role-playing games almost as much as you enjoy playing the actual game itself, or if you're just looking for tips or ideas on the character that you're thinking about playing, then welcome home. This is where you belong, and I'm really glad you're here, so thanks for being here. My name's Colby. Really quick, if you would be interested in supporting the channel above and beyond just watching and liking and subscribing and commenting, which are fantastic ways to support the channel, thank you, then I would love it if you'd consider joining as a member. There's a little button down there somewhere that says join, and for $2 a month, not only do you help me out, but also you get access to the library of write-ups that I create for each one of these builds. I do a little cheat sheet so that you don't have to go back and rewatch the video or take notes if you wanted to recreate the character yourself. Huge shout out to all of my channel members. I really appreciate your guys' support, and for everybody else, thank you just for being here, watching, liking, subscribing, like I say, commenting are also great ways to support the channel, so thanks. All right, so with my last D&D build, the catapult, it was really fun, it was a little weird, and a little bit gimmicky. Today, I'm going back to my roots. Ever since I put out my Bladesinger 2.0 video shortly after Tasha's release, people have been asking me for Bladesinger 3.0. I think this is largely because they're interested in seeing how I would do things differently ever since we got Jeremy Crawford to give us an official ruling on the whole custom lineage elven accuracy thing, where I get to eat crow. As well, I think people are interested on how things might change with the current understanding of how Shadowblade and Booming Blade interact, among other things. And while I've done a few builds with Bladesinger levels in them, ever since that time, I've not done very many that are predominantly Bladesingers. And with maybe the exception of the Shadowblade, I'm going through my five cards quick this week, those were all very different builds than Bladesinger 2.0, right? So, yes. Today is the day I think I go for what I'm officially going to call 3.0, as in if I were wanting to play a straight up melee gishy Bladesinger in game today, I think this is exactly how I would build and play it. But here's what's interesting. I didn't set out to do that with the build today when I first started thinking up the character concept. Instead, I was trying to answer this question. What is the best way that we could take advantage of the Absorb Elements spell if we wanted to use it offensively? See, I take this spell in pretty much every build that it's available for because it's a pretty great defensive spell. You use it as a reaction when you take elemental damage, right? Fire, cold, lightning, acid, thunder, to gain resistance to that damage type until the start of your next turn. A great defensive tool to have in your belt. But I very often gloss over or don't even mention the second part of that spell. The fact that when you use it, the first time you hit with a melee attack on your next turn, the target that you hit takes extra damage of the elemental type you resisted. It's not a ton of damage, it's only a d6, but it does scale by another d6 with every level that you upcast it. And some of you have been asking for a build that takes advantage of this interesting little tidbit, and I've been seeing it on my to-do list for a long time now, and I'm finding the idea more and more compelling. Primarily because the idea of a character who, like, lights themselves on fire in order to do extra damage to an enemy is just kind of cool, kind of interesting, if a little emo. It just adds that element of, like, risk and reward that I really love in my characters. Wait, a way that I can be even more vulnerable in the name of doing a little more damage? Sign me up. I can just really see someone building around this idea with their character concept. But also, I love the fact that it can kind of serve as like a poor man's smite. I mean, multiclassing into Paladin is really tempting for any melee character who wants to be able to throw down some occasional burst damage, as you well know by this point, I'm assuming, thanks to Divine Smite, right? But the fact that you need a 13 in both Strength and Charisma makes getting into Paladin nearly impossible for a lot of builds, especially Bladesingers, who tend to want to be both high in Dexterity, unless sure, you're a turtle with three levels of artificer, I suppose, and a high intelligence, right? And the more I thought about trying to make this concept, playing around the potential damage from absorb elements, work, the more apparent it became to me that the best way to do it was with a Bladesinger. Primarily because of the fact that they can cast a cantrip as part of their attack action once they get to extra attack. I almost went Sorcadin instead, and there's definitely a strong build there, I think, trying to take advantage of absorb elements. But what I sketched out for a Sorcadin was a little too close to the War Priest I did just two builds ago, that's number four. So I decided, you know what, let's incorporate it into a Bladesinger. Call it Bladesinger 3.0 and make a build that would excel in both sustained and Nova damage. Because I think more than maybe anything else I've learned in the past 2+ years of building and playing characters in D&D, I've really learned to appreciate the in-game value of being able to provide some on-demand burst damage to really turn the tide of the battle in your party's favor. Even though I still love building around sustained DPR damage per round more than just about anything. So yes, today, though I will be crunching numbers to compare to other Nova builds, rest assured that I've got my eye set very firmly on DPR as well, and I'm confident that the build we end up with is going to be really solid on both fronts. So, I proudly present D&D episode number 130, Bladesinger 3.0, aka the Flamesinger. Thanks to Mr. Rex for that suggestion. Huge shout out and thank you to my good friend Randall Hampton for this amazing artwork that he's created for this character build. He does this with all of my builds each and every week, and I love the art that he creates. Also, in case you didn't know, he's got a Kickstarter going right now for Little Game Masters. It's a TTRPG designed to be really family friendly. If you have not yet backed the Kickstarter, please check it out. I will put links in the video description, of course. It's well worth your time and investment, especially if you've got kids in your life that you would like to be gaming with. Really quick, before we jump into the build, let me read for you the character description that the team over at Describe has come up with for this build, as they are the sponsor for the video again this week. The half-elf strides toward her foe, each step like a dance set to a tempestuous tempo. Her plump body and full cheeks are almost cherubic, belying her practiced grace. 2 paces from her enemy, she draws a pair of soot-stained short swords, flourishing them in a dizzying sequence until the air thrums with an arcane song. Beneath the noise, a palpable pressure rises, radiating otherworldly heat. Like a conductor with their baton, the half-elf sculpts the esoteric symphony until that heat bursts into emerald flames that dance along her blade. Then she lashes out, channeling everything into a blazing horizontal slash. It ignites in a crescendo of light and sound. Waves of green fire inundate her enemy before roiling back at her. She welcomes those ravenous flames, lets them graze across her body, siphoning the worst of their blistering ire into the offhand blade, which she swings in a follow-up attack that rages with the silent devastation of a dying star. I might want to get that in a plaque and hang it in my office somewhere. As most of you know by now, Describe is an amazing tool that players and DMs alike can use to get professionally written descriptions of almost anything you can imagine wanting a description for in a TTRPG game. I'm talking settings, characters, attacks, dialogue, spells, magic items, you name it. And if it hasn't already been written, you can request that they create something for you with the right subscription level at least. But even with a free account, you can get access to thousands and thousands of searchable descriptions in their massive library that continues to grow each and every day, written by true professionals. And yes, they provide so much more than just box text-like descriptions. And my favorite thing that they've added recently is something I haven't highlighted for a bit, their new and incredible Sonic Library. You want to put your players in a dark cave passage or an abandoned shack with a fireplace? Well, now you can not only get a gorgeously written description of that location, but with the click of a button, you can even get the perfect sound to match the description, all in one place. When I first started talking about the Sonic Library a couple of months ago, they had like 1,200 soundscapes, I think. It's now up to 1,900, and yeah, it's still growing. So with the right subscription level, you can get access to not only all the audio files, but also a compositions tool that lets you prep your game by searching, storing, and then playing sound, and even a web player so that if you're playing together online with a VTT or whatever, you can click play on your audio and they're gonna hear it in real time. All of this is available with either a composer subscription or, for the ultimate in all things describe, a Celestial subscription, which gives you everything for less than 15 bucks a month. It's a fantastic tool to help you create the perfect environments to immerse your players. So go check them out. To learn more, go to describe.com/d4. Please use that URL so they know I sent you. I'll put the link in the video description as always. If you decide to purchase a subscription, whether at the Celestial level or any other, be sure to use the code D4 at checkout to save 10%. Thanks, Describe. You guys are the best. All right, let's jump into the build. At level one, yeah, we're starting off as a wizard here, and we're going to just beeline straight to level 6 before anything else in the name of getting to extra attack and third level spells. We could get better burst damage by multiclassing sooner, but it would really hurt both our spell slot progression and our sustained DPR, so my conscience just really won't let me detour here, if I'm being honest about how I would want to build and play this character myself in-game. So, when we first meet our champion, they are indeed a budding wizard, but I think for me, this particular wizard is, from the get-go, interested in and trained in martial skills as well. They probably even see their magic as primarily a way to enhance their martial prowess. Also, they might be a little bit of a zealot. Not necessarily religious, though I suppose they could be. I see them more as a character who sees some kind of fault or impurity within themselves that they are constantly laboring to purge. This might simply manifest itself in the form of overworking themselves, taxing themselves to the extreme, constantly training, self-criticizing, and outworking everyone they know to push themselves harder, to rid themselves of their perceived imperfections. Yeah, this person isn't super healthy. They've got some worthiness wounds they probably need to deal with. As for our race, no, I am not going custom lineage or variant human. Hooray! Yes, there's a feat I really want, but it's dependent upon being an elf or a half-elf, as I'm sure many of you are anticipating. And also, Bladesingers want a lot of stats to be really high, and so going half-elf lets us get some really fantastic starting ability scores, which I love. So yeah, let's go half-elf. As for which sub-race of half-elf to take, honestly, I'm just gonna say pick your favorite. I think Drow and Wood Elf are my two favorites here, personally, for either more spellcasting in the case of the Drow half-elf or better move speed in the case of the Wood Elf half-elf. But no sub-race is going to have a huge impact on the mechanics of this character, so I'd probably favor story and flavor of your character over anything here, personally. I know, it's probably a little weird to hear me say that. As for our starting ability scores, I'm assuming we're going point by as always, and would recommend taking a 15 dexterity and taking our plus 2 from half-elf there, a 15 intelligence and a plus 1 there, and then, yeah, a 15 constitution and a plus 1 there. Now, you could of course go with, say, a lower constitution so we don't have to tank wisdom, but starting off with our three most important ability scores being at a 16 or higher just feels really amazing here to me. And Also, since we started Wizard, that means we have Wisdom Saving Throw proficiency, making me feel a little less bad about dumping it. Also, since we don't have Constitution Saving Throw proficiency, and we're planning on doing damage to ourselves, getting our Constitution to a 16 right out the gate felt more important to me, both for our survival and for our concentration checks, of course. As for our starting equipment, I'm going to recommend going gold buy as usual and say, let's take studded leather, 2 short swords, a spell book, of course, and whatever other needs we may have and be able to afford. As a wizard then, at level 1, we get arcane recovery first off, which tells us that once per day, after a short rest, we can recover spent spell slots equal to half our wizard level rounded up. More spell slots, always welcome. As for the spells we should take at level 1 here, there are, of course, a lot of good ones to choose from, but there are 4, actually, we really kind of need for this build to work like I want it to. First up, Find Familiar, which will let us summon a familiar that we can use for great utility to scout and spy and things like that, but also, yes, of course, to have them take the help action and thus grant us advantage to our first attack on our turn. Then we've got the Skag cantrips, the blade trips, Booming Blade and Green Flame Blade. With both of these spells, when you cast them, you make an attack with a melee weapon that's worth at least 1 silver piece, and if you hit, you deal the weapon's damage as normal, plus, after level 5 anyway, some extra damage. The Booming Blade, of course, has that thing where if they then move, they're going to take some extra damage, and with Green Flame Blade, you can also do fire damage to an adjacent target that you can see equal to your intelligence modifier. Yeah, you know what I'm going to do here, don't you? There's nothing in the rules that states that this adjacent target that gets hit by that Green Flame Blade extra damage cannot be yourself. As long as you can see yourself, you are a valid potential target. So yes, as for the other spell we need here, of course it is Absorb Elements, as I've said, and then this is the plan for our Nova round. First we set it up by hitting the enemy with Green Flame Blade, do the damage to them, then have the fire damage jump back and hit, yes, us. We are so angry with ourselves, we've decided that the only way to truly purge our impurities is with the cleansing power of fire. Now, when that fire damage hits us, we could use our reaction to cast Absorb Elements, giving us resistance to fire damage and thus turning that 3 damage we'd normally take with the cantrip at this level anyway into 1 damage since we round down. Alright, that didn't hurt too bad. Though, admittedly, later it will get a little worse. Now, since we've absorbed some fire damage, on our next turn, we'll get to do an extra d6 of damage on our first melee weapon hit. And, of course, the question that we ought to be asking ourselves here is it really worth taking damage, spending a spell slot, and using our reaction just to get an extra d6 of damage? The answer, of course, is it depends. Sure. You could do more damage with that spell slot. You could also cast Sleep and take some enemies out of the fight for a while, right? But my question is there a way for you to get some guaranteed damage by using your reaction? If we're using our actions and bonus actions to go full Bladesinger melee? Not that I can think of for this character. Sometimes that extra damage that you do is going to be overkill, or still not enough to finish off an enemy. In those cases, yeah, it's not going to feel worth it. But sometimes it will mean the difference between life and death for an enemy. If they were to survive for 1 more round, they'd be harming you and your allies, eating up more turns and resources from you and your party to finish them off. If they die, on the other hand, it could really turn the tide of the combat in your party's favor. When that happens, then yeah, I think it would totally be worth it. And besides, it's kind of just a cool and fun idea to play around with, isn't it? At level 2, wizards get their subclass, their Arcane Tradition, and yes, we're going Blade Singing, the subclass that I've had the most fun playing in D&D. It's really as good as it gets for Gishes in this game system, in my opinion. And while my Magus build for Pathfinder that I did last week, that's my last card, might arguably nail the concept of the Gish slightly better than anything in D&D. Mechanically speaking, the Bladesinger is more powerful, I think, when compared to other classes in this game. And that's always fun. So yes, as a bladesinger, we get first up training in war and song. This gives us proficiency in light armor and in one type of one-handed melee weapon of our choice. So yes, up until now, actually at level one, we've been running around in robes and shooting cantrips, right? But at this level, we finally get to don that studded leather and start swinging our short swords like we should be. Now, a lot of people ask, why use studded leather with an AC of 12 when we could just cast mage armor and enjoy an AC of 13? I think either choice is valid. The problem with mage armor is that it only lasts 8 hours, so there's a decent chance you might have to cast it twice to get through an adventuring day. And of course, it takes up one of our very few precious spell slots for only a plus 1 to armor class. Now, go ahead and use it if you'd like, especially once we get a little bit higher level if we still haven't gotten like a plus 1 studded leather yet, but just know that if you do, there will come a time when that plus 1 will not make a difference, but if you would have had one more spell slot for the shield spell with its plus 5 to AC, it would have prevented you from getting hit, and you'll feel bad. And of course, conversely, if you wear studded leather, every single attack that hits you will just barely hit you, and you'll wish you would have cast mage armor. But then, yes, we also get our defining feature, of course, Bladesong. This tells us that proficiency bonus times per day. As a bonus action, we can start this elven magic that lasts for 1 minute, and so long as we're not wearing medium or heavy armor, using a shield, or using two hands to attack with a weapon, we get a bump to our AC and to our concentration checks equal to our intelligence modifier. We get 10 more feet of move speed and have advantage on acrobatics checks. This is the feature that kinda lets us hang out in melee even though we're a squishy wizard. It's just the best. It gives us an 18 AC for now, 19 with mage armor, and it's just going to keep getting better. At level 3, we would get second level spells, and yes, while of course you should be taking Misty Step and Mirror Image and Hold Person and all of the other great and important spells, the spell I want to make sure we grab here is, yes, my favorite, Shadowblade. So, okay, Shadowblade. It requires our concentration and then summons a Sword of Magical Gloom that we are proficient in and has the Light, Finesse, and Thrown properties. It does 2d8 necrotic damage on a hit, which is awesome. Also, we have advantage on our attacks with it if we are attacking in dim light and darkness, and as a creature with dark vision, that's also awesome. However, I will admit that the more D&D I play, the more I realize that Shadowblade, unfortunately, is just not quite as awesome as I want it to be, especially at higher levels. Despite having built an entire character around trying to get as much out of the spell as I possibly can, it just, yeah. I mean, I've said this before, let me just reiterate. The biggest problem with Shadowblade is that magic weapons exist in D&D, and perhaps the biggest problem with my spreadsheets is that I don't account for that fact when I crunch numbers. I think if I could wave a magic wand and rework all 129 of my builds to assume that characters had like a plus 1 weapon at level 6, a plus 2 weapon at level 9, and a plus 3 weapon at level 13 or something like that, I probably would. But I just don't have the time to go back and do that at this point, so we'll stay where we're at. What's more, in the past, I've decided to make the assumption that we're always in dim light or darkness when using Shadowblade because best case scenarios. But I don't think I'm going to be making that assumption anymore. Which means, yeah, I should probably go back and rework numbers on builds where I did, but that's a lot of work that I don't really have time for either at the moment, so sorry. We're just gonna have to do some mental adjustments in our heads. Of course, if we're making our own dim light like we were in the Shadowblade build, then sure, but otherwise, I just think it's too much to ask. But perhaps the most challenging thing about Shadowblade when being used on a Bladesinger, honestly, is that it takes a bonus action to cast and only lasts for a minute. Rules as written, we couldn't cast Shadowblade and start our Bladesong on the same turn. Now, a lot of tables allow you to use your action to do another bonus action if you prefer, but we try to stick to rules as written here, though we sometimes fail. What's more, you can't use Shadow Blade to cast Green Flame Blade or Booming Blade, rules as written, either, right? Since those cantrips require that you make a weapon attack with a weapon worth at least a silver piece. Feel free to argue in the comments about your own favorite workaround for that little bit of annoyance. I think I'm familiar with all of them, but go ahead and try and convince me. Anyway, when we go over our first damage report, I'll get into the mechanics of how we set everything up for our Nova round if we're using Shadow Blade, but just know that if we use Shadow Blade, we're not going to be able to go Nova until round 3 most of the time, and that might be a deal breaker for some of you. I mean, part of the point of building for Nova is to blow something up early in the combat encounter, right? So this kind of takes the wind out of our sails a little bit. Also, like I said, if you have a magic weapon, you might be better off using your concentration for something else, especially once we get third level spells. More on that in a little bit. Anyway, again, I've never assumed magic weapons in my builds outside of artificers up to this point, and yeah, I'm not going to start assuming them now, so yes, and especially at this level, Shadowblade will be the best use of our concentration, I think. At level 4, we get our first ability score increase or feat, and I'm going to do what many of you have probably already predicted and take my favorite feat of all time, Elven Accuracy. This not only bumps, for us, Dexterity by 1, making it a nice even 18, but then, yes, when we make attacks using our Dexterity, or Intelligence, Wisdom, or Charisma, for that matter, and have advantage on the attack, we basically get to roll 3 dice instead of the usual 2, which does really nice things for our critical hit chance, bumping it from a 9.75% chance with regular advantage to 14.26% chance with Elven Accuracy super advantage, right? And it also just really helps out our overall sustained damage, especially against enemies with a middling and higher AC, assuming we have advantage, of course. Which we will, at least some of the time, thanks to our familiar, and later on, all of the time, at least during our Nova round. At level 5, we get third level spells. Third level spells are just the best, and while yes, you should consider Fireball and Hypnotic Pattern and Fear and Counterspell and Dispel Magic and Fly among others, the ones I'm going to highlight here are two of my favorites. First up, Spirit Shroud. This spell requires our concentration and lets our attacks do an extra 1d8 of damage so long as the enemy is within 10 feet of us. It also gives some other nice benefits in that it prevents enemies you hit from recovering hit points and also slows them. But no, this is not what we're going to be using our concentration on, like I've said, unless you have an amazing magic weapon at this point. I also, though, do want to mention here my favorite summoning spell, Summon Fey. This lasts for a whole hour, which in and of itself is maybe the biggest selling point for it over both Shadow Blade and Spirit Shroud, which each only last a minute. Like, especially if you're in a dungeon crawl or something and regularly have more than one combat encounter per hour, or if you want to more reliably go Nova on round 2, since you're more likely to have Summon Fey up when combat breaks out than the other two spells, it makes it really attractive. Briefly, the spell summons a tiny Fey that will obey your commands without any actions required by you to direct them. They take their turn immediately after you and can make a short sword attack for, at this level, 2d6 plus 6 damage on a hit. Not bad. What's more, as a bonus action, they can teleport 30 feet, and then if you select Fuming as their mood, which I would, they have advantage on their next attack. The damage difference between this and Shadowblade are quite close. Shadowblade wins out by a few points of damage, again assuming no magic weapons, and by a significant amount if you're in dim light or darkness, and no one is like knocking your target prone or casting fairy fire on them or otherwise doing something to give you advantage, right? So, know your options, know what's going to be best for you in this situation. Don't forget also, now that we're level 5, Green Flame Blade and Booming Blade do an extra 1d8 of damage to our target, and unfortunately, in the case of Green Flame Blade, an extra 1d8 to us as well. That's okay. If we have resistance via Absorb Elements, it's still only going to be 3 or 4 damage on average. Not a huge deal. But at level 6, this is where things really kind of all come together for our Bladesinger, because yes, we get the best extra attack in all of D&D 5e. Now, when we take the attack action, we can just make two weapon attacks, like everyone else, or we can make one weapon attack and cast a cantrip. This is what makes the Bladesinger the best Gish in the game, in my opinion. Or at least one of the things that makes them the best. Because even if it's just a cantrip, it actually lets us cast spells and make weapon attacks with a single action, and it makes me feel like I'm a true spell sword. Alright, at level 6, it's time for our first damage report, so let's go over tactics here for our Nova round because it's a little complicated. Here's how I envision things working out for us. First off, when combat begins, if we couldn't smell it coming and thus decided to use Bladesong before we rolled initiative, which you should absolutely do if you can get away with it, then we've got to spend round one getting Bladesong going and making a couple of attacks with our short sword and cantrips. Then on round two, we take the attack action with our short sword. For our first attack, we should cast the Green Flame Blade cantrip. There's nothing that says we have to make a weapon attack first, then a cantrip. Only that one of our attacks can be replaced with a cantrip, so let's do that first because our familiar is giving advantage to us on our first attack, and it is the more important one. If we hit, we do extra damage to them via the cantrip, and then yes, a little fire damage to ourselves. When that happens, we use our reaction to cast Absorb Elements. A little paradoxically, the rules state that using Absorb Elements causes our next hit on our next turn to do fire damage, in this case. Not just our next hit, regardless of when it happens. Even if we were to make another attack on this turn, which we will be, right? I'm assuming this is because the vast majority of the time, reactions happen on another creature's turn, but that's not always the case. The rules even state that they can occur on your turn or someone else's, right? Anyway, after absorbing that fire damage, we'd then make our second attack with our short sword and, as a bonus action, summon our Shadow Blade. Finally, on round three is when we get to go Nova. First off, we take the attack action, again casting either the Green Flame Blade cantrip, if there's another enemy standing next to your target, so you can deal damage to them this time, or if not, the Booming Blade cantrip. We do that first again, right, to get advantage from our familiar. But we'd also be adding both the cantrip damage and the absorb elements damage on this attack as well. Then, with our second attack, we would make a Shadow Blade attack. Now, some of you might be saying that you can't do this, that the attacks from the attack action have to come from the same weapon if you're dual wielding. And actually, that's not true. Check out this tweet from the illustrious Jeremy Crawford himself. Obviously, you and or your DM may rule otherwise, but assuming we follow JC's lead here, this is really important for us because now that we've made both of our attacks for our action, since we're dual wielding, we get to make a bonus action attack from two weapon fighting. And here's my question. If we're truly not required to make both of our attacks with the same weapon, and have now made one attack with each, which weapon do we attack with for our bonus action attack that's allowed by two weapon fighting? The rules simply state, when you take the attack action and attack with a light melee weapon that you're holding in one hand, you can use a bonus action to attack with a different light melee weapon that you're holding in the other hand. So, what do we consider to be our other hand in this scenario? We've used both. The only reading I can fathom being rules as written is that we get to choose in this scenario, so long as both of our weapons are light melee weapons, which they are. I appreciate that some of you may not like this, they may think it feels janky or manipulative or metagaming or whatever. I think you have to rule against what Jeremy Crawford said earlier about both attacks not needing to come from the same weapon in order to say, no, you don't get to choose which weapon to attack with on your bonus action here. And if you decide to do that, that's fine. For the rest of us, we get to make a bonus action attack with our Shadow Blade, though we don't get to add our ability score modifier to that attack, right, because it's our bonus action attack. And we don't have the two-weapon fighting style yet. One last thing. Some of you might be wondering why we would want to have our hands full if we don't have the Warcaster feat, which I hate. Since that would prohibit us from casting spells with somatic and or material components. Here's why. First off, I'm not planning on casting a lot of spells other than the blade trips during our turn, once we've used absorb elements, right? And if we needed to, we could drop a weapon to do so. Second off, at my table, and I think most of yours as well, so far as I can tell. You can drop a weapon as part of the reaction of casting something like a shield spell or a counter spell or absorb elements even, so I'm not super worried about it. If that's not the case at your table, you should definitely consider picking up Warcaster, maybe even as early as level 4. Phew, okay, that was a lot. So, assuming that we used a third level spell slot to absorb elements here, and I'm not saying that you should, just exploring what's possible, we would get an extra 3d6 of fire damage out of it during our Nova round. Altogether, if everything hit, we would do 4d6 plus 7d8 plus 8 Nova damage here. And thus, against enemies with a 10 armor class, on average, we would do 54 damage during this round, and against enemies with a 15 armor class, it would be 46 damage. And, okay, compared to other Nova characters we've built to date, this isn't amazing. It's middle of the pack tier 3, but the truth is, the only thing we're doing here that could even be considered as part of a Nova round of damage is the extra d6 from absorb elements, right? Not a lot. Also, the sustained damage here would be almost identical to Bladesinger 2.0, which is still, after all this time, holding on to the number one spot for overall sustained DPR on my spreadsheets. Though, I don't think I ever adjusted those numbers like I should have to account for the whole you can't do custom lineage and elven accuracy thing, to say nothing of the fact that I was assuming you were attacking in dim light or darkness with a shadow blade. And I've not adjusted those numbers because I'm afraid that it might bump the cheese grater into the number one spot, and that just will not stand. Anyway, the point is, our sustained DPR is going to be really solid here, and now we're going to take a little time to actually put a little burst into our burst damage. Because, yes, at level 7, we're going to multi-class. Now, you, of course, don't have to, and I might not even recommend doing so. It all boils down to what you want out of this Bladesinger of yours. If you are a character who wants to be a spellcaster above all, then you should just stay wizard. If getting to, say, Wall of Force, so you can shut down potentially multiple enemies on the battlefield without even giving them a saving throw against being made useless, sounds way more important and fun than doing big burst damage once in a while to a single enemy, then don't sweat it. You'll still enjoy some nice defensive features from your Bladesinger and be able to make some decent melee attacks when you're not doing other spellcastery things. But if, on the other hand, you want to hone that martial prowess just a bit more, to put a little more sword into your spell sword for some big Nova kabooms, then follow me to fighter levels. And yeah, let me just wax a little philosophical here for half a moment, if I may. The reason I really think I would go this route if I were playing a Bladesinger today is because, like I said at the beginning, I've really just learned to appreciate the value of being able to pull out a big Nova round once in a while. Not only is it incredibly fun to do a boatload of damage sometimes, but it's an incredibly potent tactic for you and your party. And while, sure, getting to higher level spells and spell slots will not only give us access to those better wizard spells, it will also, thanks to spell scaling, get us to better sustained DPR as well if we're using our concentration for a damage-based spell. That said, the DPR increase isn't so massive that it greatly outweighs, in my mind, the ability to just totally eliminate an enemy or two in a single round of combat if we take a little detour here to pick up some big burst potential. So, yes, our character right now wants to take a short break from their arcane studies to focus exclusively on sharpening their martial skills. And thus, as a fighter 1, we'd get second wind first off, letting us recover hit points equal to a d10 plus our fighter level once per short rest as a bonus action. Great. And then we get a fighting style. And yeah, for this build, I'm gonna go with the two-weapon fighting style. It's not going to add a ton of damage for us, but it will let us add our dexterity modifier to our bonus action offhand attack, and every little bit helps. I wouldn't blame you for going defense here instead to add a +1 to your AC, or even superior technique for a Battlemaster superiority die. Anyway, we're sticking with two-weapon fighting. At level 8, we would be a fighter 2, and that means, yes, action surge. that most important of fighter abilities for those interested in Nova damage. Now, once per short rest, we can take two actions instead of one on a turn, and yes, for us, that will mean two more attacks thanks to the attack action, or better yet, because we're a Bladesinger, one more attack and one more cantrip. Arguably, we get more out of Action Surge than just about any other character as a result. But I'm not going to just stop at Fighter 2, because at level 9, I want to be a Fighter 3 so we can get our Martial Archetype, our Fighter subclass. And this is actually quite important to this build. I want to go with Battlemaster here, because it's going to do really amazing things for our Nova round. As a Battlemaster, we learn 3 maneuvers from a fabulous list that mostly enhance our attacks, but can provide some utility and even support too if we'd like. We also get 4 superiority dice per short rest to fuel those maneuvers with, and those dice are d8s. There are a lot of wonderful maneuvers here for us to choose from, but the most important for us for this build is, Trip Attack. Trip Attack tells us that when we hit an enemy with a weapon attack, we can spend a superiority die, add that die to the damage we deal, and then attempt to knock them prone. They make a strength save against, for us, our dexterity-based DC. And if they fail, and they are large-sized or smaller, whoop, prone. And of course, if an enemy is prone, then that means we, since we're making attacks against them from 5 feet away, have advantage on our attack rolls. As for the other maneuvers you should take here, I'd say go with Menacing Attack, since it also adds a superiority die of damage, but if they fail their wisdom save, they're frightened of you until the end of your next turn, meaning they can't move closer to you if you were to, say, back away, and they have disadvantage on their attacks and ability checks, so long as they can see you, and that's really great. But other than that, for that third one, I'd say just PYF. Pick your favorite. Alright, for our level 9 damage report. Quite a bit has changed for us since last check, tactically. First off, we're going to want to get set up with Green Flame Blade, Absorb Elements, and Shadow Blade, like we have been. But then on our Nova round, we'd make that cantrip attack first with the help of our familiar for advantage. But this time, we would also apply a trip attack to that cantrip attack as well, for not only an extra d8 of damage, but hopefully knocking them prone. And yes, I'm going to assume that we've got them prone when I'm crunching numbers, even though sometimes they're going to make that save. Now, with a prone enemy, we can make our second attack and our bonus action attack with our Shadow Blade, adding our dexterity modifier to both this time, since we've got the 2-weapon fighting style. Then, Action Surge for 2 more Shadow Blade attacks, right? We don't have to cast a cantrip with one of our attacks with extra attack if we don't want to. We can. And a 3d8 from Shadow Blade is better than the 1d6 plus 1d8 for a short sword with Booming Blade, right? If we were to do a cantrip instead of just 2 attacks. But again, importantly, if you have like a Flame Tongue short sword or something, which you very well could have, we are character level 9 here, then yes, you'd want to go Spirit Shroud for your concentration. You might even want to go Spirit Shroud if you have like a plus 2 short sword, depending on the enemy AC. Anyway, the great news here is that if our enemy is prone, we will have Elven Accuracy super advantage on all of our attacks during our Nova round. And we could even, if we wanted to get really crazy, and we do, use up all of our superiority dice for a little more burst. And if we did all of that against an enemy with a 10 armor class here, we would do 123 damage during our Nova round, and against a 16 armor class, it would be 119 damage. All right, now we're talking. That's more than double since last time we checked. And it puts us kind of more in the upper half of tier 2 or even bottom half of tier 1 compared to other Nova builds that I've done to date. With some mighty fine sustained DPR and wizard capabilities to boot. Now, I should mention, if it were me and I were using Shadowblade but not fighting in Dim Light or Darkness, or if I were using a magic weapon and Spirit Shroud, let's say, I totally would not blow all of my superiority dice in one round, most of the time. I'd rather use the trip attack on my first familiar helped advantage attack to try and knock them prone, so I could continue to enjoy Elven Accuracy throughout my turn and be able to do that for like 4 different rounds, right? Saving that trip attack to just use once per turn. So yes, while I'm exploring best case scenarios, it doesn't mean that that's what I would recommend that we do, right? Regardless, we are putting out some pretty respectable burst damage now, and I feel great. At level 10, though, we're going back to wizard. There's just too much to be gained by higher level wizard spells and spell slots, not to mention, eventually, the very lovely Song of Victory. So back to wizard we go. And that means we get 4th level spells here as a wizard 7. And there are so many great spells here. Banishment, Dimension Door, Polymorph, Fire Shield, Wall of Fire. I'm not going to assume that we're using any of them during our Nova round, or even for sustained damage for that matter, so go ahead and pick your favorites. At level 7, we would be a Wizard 8, and that means we get another ability score increase or feat, meaning we get to cap our Dexterity modifier and bump it here up to 20, and that makes me super duper happy for better armor class and more damage. Don't forget, our blade trips scale up to 2d8 damage on our turn now at level 11, which is great, but I am slightly sad that it means 2d8 plus 3 damage to us as well. Though, again, with absorb elements, still not going to hurt that bad. At level 12, we would be a wizard 9, and that means we get 5th level spells, and while dominate person and hold monster and synaptic static and wall of force and others are all amazing, the only one I feel like we got to talk about here is, yeah, animate objects. It's a great spell. It's arguably overpowered, but tempered by the fact that a lot of enemies have resistance to bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing damage from non-magical weapons, and I think rules as written, we have to consider the attacks that these tiny objects we'd potentially be animating with this spell, all 10 of them, to be non-magical weapon attacks. It's also tempered by the fact that a strong AoE attack, area of effect, might take out most, if not all of them, in one go. So here's the reality. Thanks to the fact that all of our attacks during our Nova round are made with Elven Accuracy super advantage, we would actually do more damage with Shadow Blade for our concentration than we would animate objects, even if the enemy was not resistant to non-magical weapon attacks. And that's actually kind of amazing. Of course, our sustained damage would be higher using animate objects in that scenario. If the enemy was resistant, however, even our sustained damage would be a little bit lower. The same is true if we had a great magic weapon and are using Spirit Shroud for concentration instead, which could be upcast to 2d8 damage per hit here with a 5th level spell slot. Shadowblade scaling to 4d8 now. Anyway, I just want to make sure that you're aware of your options here and you pick the best one depending on your situation. If your enemies are not resistant to bludgeoning, piercing, slashing damage from non-magical weapon attacks, and you feel confident that they're not going to be able to just blow up all of your silver coins in a single go, right? I probably would be using animate objects here, even though our Nova damage would be slightly less. It'd still be good, and then our sustained damage, of course, is going to be even better. Otherwise, stick to Shadow Blade or Spirit Shroud with your magic weapon. Or, of course, Wall of Force or Hypnotic Pattern or Fear, right, as the situation calls for it. At level 13, we would be a Wizard 10, and that means we get Song of Defense, which tells us that we can use our reaction and a spell slot to reduce damage dealt to us by an amount equal to 5 times the spell slot's level. This is an okay option for defensive purposes for a couple of reasons. One, we might have been hit by something whose attack roll surpassed our AC by more than 5, in which case, shield would not help, especially if they got a critical hit on us, right? And two, using this is not actually casting a spell, so there are no material or somatic components to worry about if you still haven't paid the Warcaster tax, and maybe should have. Alright, at level 13, it's time for our next damage report, and the only things that have really changed since last check are that we have better spell slots to upcast what, for us, will be Shadow Blade, as far as the spreadsheet goes, as well as potentially for an upcast Absorb Elements. I know, we would be insane to use our only other 5th level spell slot to get 5d6 damage out of Absorb Elements here. Don't do this. Except for in the most extreme of circumstances. Even though I'm going to assume that we are because I'm exploring what's possible, not what's advisable. In addition, we've capped our Dexterity modifier here for a better hit chance, better damage, and our Green Flame Blade and Booming Blade have gone up by a d8 for both our targets and, sadly, ourselves. But at this point, against an enemy with a 10 armor class on our Nova round, we would do 158 damage on average. And against an enemy with a 17 armor class, it would be barely less, 154. My goodness, I love elven accuracy. That damage arc is just so flat as the enemy AC increases. Just go look at the spreadsheet if you haven't. It's in the video description, as always. So, compared to other burst damage builds that I've done to date, we're kind of in the middle or maybe even bottom half of tier 2, and I feel great about that, to be honest, considering how strong our sustained damage is as well, not to mention all the fabulous wizardy options we have at our disposal to boot. At level 14, we would be a wizard 11, and that means we get 6th level spells, and while you should absolutely take mass suggestion here for some fantastic, potentially encounter-ending control that comes to us concentration-free, or maybe even contingency for an, oh man, I'm glad I thought of that ahead of time, save the day option here. I am totally taking Tensor's Transformation and I'm not ashamed. I laugh because a lot of people, my friend Chris, Triant Monk included, hate this spell and think it's a trap. And I guess for me, it all comes down to, again, what you're hoping to accomplish with your Bladesinger. If it's to be a spellcaster, first and foremost, with some decent defensive buffs and some okay melee damage as an option, then you should avoid this spell like the plague. But if, like me, you want to make the best melee attacker you can, who also happens to be a wizard, then it's beautiful, and I love it. Anyway, Tensor's Transformation, yes, requires our concentration, takes an action to cast, and then gives us 50 temporary hit points, advantage on all of our attacks, which again for us, elven accuracy, right? That doesn't go away. Proficiency in strength and constitution saves, including concentration checks. And best of all, an extra 2d12 of damage on each and every weapon attack we make with a melee weapon. That's so much extra damage. And it would work on magic weapons, which we for sure have at this level, right? So yeah, with a level 6 spell slot, Tensor's Transformation is better for both our Nova damage and our sustained DPR when compared to both Shadowblade and Spirit Shroud. And that's to say nothing of the really nice defensive benefits it gives us to boot. Of course, Animate Objects, upcast at the 6th level, would give us 12 tiny objects, and that is going to overshadow Tensor's Transformation if the enemy isn't resistant to the damage they do and can't wipe them out with a well-placed AoE if we're talking about sustained damage, not Nova damage. But you know what? Screw it. I say go ahead and transform and laugh yourself silly at all the naysayers. Now, the big drawback, of course, with Tensor's Transformation is that while you're transformed, you can't cast spells. And yeah, that's a bummer. And it keeps us from doing all of the other wizardy things that we might want to be doing here. But I'm okay with it. We have 50 temporary hit points. Shield feels a little less important to me at this point. Proficiency in constitution saving throws. I don't know. I love it. I'm not ashamed. At level 15, we would be a wizard 12, and that means another ability score increase or feat. And now that we've got our dexterity capped, I want to bump our intelligence. I'd love to have done this sooner, since this increases our concentration checks, our armor class, and of course, any wizard spell we use that would require a saving throw or a spell attack roll, right? I'm happy to at least have gotten here at this point, though. At level 16, we would be a wizard 13, and that means 7th level spells, and 7th level spells are wonderful, but I really can't imagine taking anything other than Force Cage here. It's like Wall of Force, but better, especially since it doesn't require concentration. Of course, we might just end up using that spell slot to upcast Shadowblade or Spirit Shroud like an idiot. And finally, for us, at level 17, we would be a wizard 14, and that means Song of Victory, and I'm so happy to get something at late level in a character that actually increases the damage they do by a fairly significant amount. It sadly feels like the exception to the rule in 5e for most subclasses, especially marshals. I mean, you know, if we're talking about full spellcasters, of course, they're better spells and spell slots, then it doesn't really apply, but for everybody else, yeah, things don't often scale very well. Anyway, with Song of Victory, we simply get to add our intelligence modifier to all of our melee weapon attacks while our Bladesong is active. Now I really wish that we would have capped intelligence, and I suppose if I were playing this character to level 18, I just might go fighter 4 next level to cap it, even though that would mean missing out on level 9 spells once we hit 20th level, if we got to 20th level. I know, that probably sounds stupid, but that's okay. I've done stupider things. Anyway, don't forget, at level 17, our blade trips get their final bump, now doing 3d8 extra damage to our target and ourselves. For our final damage report, then. Since last check, our green flame blade and booming blade have gone up to 3d8. We've added the lovely Song of Victory, which means an additional 4 damage for us now on each of our melee attacks. We've also, of course, added a 7th level spell slot, meaning that we could potentially now upcast Shadow Blade to do 5d8 damage on a hit, or Spirit Shroud to do an extra 3d8 per hit. Of course, there is also Tensor's Transformation and Animate Objects, which would potentially animate 14 objects as a 7th level spell. So the question is, which of all those options is the best? And the answer is, drumroll, Spirit Shroud, actually. At this level, upcasting it to do 3d8 damage per hit means that it gets the slightest edge over even Shadowblade if we didn't have a magic weapon. The reason is because when you're using Spirit Shroud and any other spell for concentration for that matter, other than Shadow Blade, you get to make a second Booming Blade attack on your turn when you Action Surge. And now that Booming Blade is doing 3d8 damage to the target, it takes a slight edge even with a mundane weapon, because we can't Booming Blade with Shadow Blade, right? But every single attack we make with Spirit Shroud does 3d8 of damage, regardless of what weapon we're using. That said, the Nova damage on Tensor's Transformation is only behind by like 2 or 3 points during our Nova round compared to Spirit Shroud, and it would be better during our non-Nova rounds, unless someone was giving you advantage on your target while you were using Spirit Shroud, since the thing that gives Tensor's Transformation the leg up is that they automatically get advantage no matter what. That's why it takes the lead during non-Nova time. Finally, yes, if you happen to be fighting an enemy at level 17 who's not resistant to non-magical weapon attacks, then sure, 14 animated objects beats all of them for sustained DPR, but comes in dead last during our Nova round, regardless of whether they're resistant to it or not. Whew. Okay, so yeah, for me, I think I might go Tensor's Transformation here and save that 7th level spell slot for like a Force Cage, right? Or maybe just another casting of Tensor's Transformation. Oh, I really hope Chris watches this video. Anyway, at this level, assuming Spirit Shroud, we would, on average during our Nova round, against a 10 armor class enemy, do 218 damage, and against an 18 AC, it would be 212. And compared to other Nova builds that I've done to date, this puts us again kind of in the middle of the pack for tier 2, which, like I've said, considering our fantastic sustained damage and other wizardly goodness, makes me super happy. So, let's break it down in the final thoughts. The tier score for this character, when you take the damage that they did at every enemy armor class we calculated for, at each of the 4 damage reports, and just averaged it all into one big number, we end up with a 124, which puts us in the upper half of tier 2. And yeah, feels pretty great to me. The truth is, we would have been a fair bit higher if it hadn't been for our really underwhelming Nova numbers at level 6, where we were doing hardly any burst damage at all, right? So, do I still think this is how I would build a Bladesinger if I were going to start a new one today? Absolutely. Getting to 3rd level spells and extra attack right out the gate feels so good on this character, and I appreciate having at least a little bit of a burst damage option early on in the form of the fun and kind of weird absorb elements, light yourself on fire play. It's admittedly not a ton of damage, and frankly, I don't know how we could get any more out of it than we already have, since Absorb Elements only works on a single attack. But yeah, I mean, I'll take a poor man's smite on a subclass who has very little hope of getting paladin levels, realistically, unless you rolled for stats and just got crazy lucky. Cause yeah, sometimes those few extra d6s are gonna be all you need. And even though delaying 5th level spells especially can feel painful, for the way I like to play my Gishes focused on melee damage above all else, with Battlefield Control kind of coming second, it just feels really great to me to get the extra burst damage output that a few fighter levels can give you. And hey, at the end of the day, even with three fighter levels at level 9, we've still got some really fantastic control options available if we need and want them. All in all, the character feels super well-rounded and powerful to me, whether you're needing to Nova or just do really high consistent damage round after round after round, or alternatively, do other cool, awesome, powerful things that wizards get to do. In short, it feels to me like the perfect spell sword. So, that's the build for the week. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you know how grateful I am for you, for all that you do, for me, for this channel. I couldn't do what I do without you guys. I'm very appreciative of you. Thanks for being here. I hope you have a fantastic day and a really great week, and that you stay safe and you be good and kind and happy, and that I see you again very soon. But until then, take care. Still messing with the audio, with the visuals, playing with the lights. Let me know what you think. I'm recording in 4K today as opposed to 1080p, but the frame rate's at 30 instead of 60 because that's as good as my camera will do. Let me know if you've got strong opinions on the quality. La 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 la. La 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 la. I got no song today. Sorry. Well, don't even say that. You know what? Don't even get into that. Well, don't say that. Don't say that. That was a lot to not say. And don't say that. I've already said that. Well, say that later. Do say that, just not now.